Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Alzheimer's disease is the fifth leading cause of death, but it's a safe bet that it's the most feared disease in the world. We have a condition. It is a condition that strips away a person's intelligence, memory, personality. It's a horrifying prospect, but it's one that affects one in every eight individuals age 65 and older. We'll try to answer your questions about Alzheimer's disease. We're going to try because there's so much still not known about the disease and so much that's misunderstood. Give us a call, 614-8980. And if you have a question or comment, you can email us questions to thesource@tpr.org. Go to our comment section on our website at tpr.org. And with me in the studio to talk about that is one of the world's top Alzheimer's disease researchers, Dr. George Perry. Thanks for being here, Dr. Perry.
Thank you very much for having me.
And you're one of the sixth most cited authors on scientific papers on Alzheimer's disease around the world, dean of the UTSA College of Science and professor of biology. Now, the way you got into Alzheimer's was, it was kind of a roundabout way, right? It was, you didn't start off studying people. It was through marine biology.
Yes, I started studying marine biology, actually studying the same process I now study in Alzheimer's disease, oxidative stress, metabolism. I studied that in marine organisms, and I applied the knowledge I learned from those organisms to studying Alzheimer's disease.
And but there are Alzheimer's disease, it's a terrible disease. Many people really fear getting it. Why do you think that it's such a looms so heavy in people's minds?
I think because it has such a strong effect on families. The economic implications are really large because the patients usually need to be cared for in nursing homes or require a tremendous amount of family care. And the patients are stripped of their identity through the process of the disease.
And, well, there's a lot of myths and people don't know what to make of Alzheimer's, and home remedies are kind of coming up trying to deal with it. We're already getting some phone calls. Let's go ahead and talk to we're going to talk to Steve on the line, and he wants to know about aluminum and the effects on the brain. Steve, you're on the air.
Hello. I had a question. I just wanted to know if aluminum has any effect on the brain or the biochemistry of the body.
All right. Thank you, Steve. Dr. Perry?
Aluminum has been studied in Alzheimer's disease for over 30 years. And aluminum itself is highly toxic in the body, and it's an unusual metal because it has no known biological function. In other words, it doesn't do anything good in the body, but it moves through the body very much like iron moves through the body. And the lesions of the disease, the things that define Alzheimer's disease, plaques and tangles, the pathology of the disease, accumulate aluminum as well as other metals. So people thought 30 years ago that might be the cause of the disease. But there's really been very little evidence linking aluminum to being causative. It's important that aluminum be either in or out in terms of a cause of the disease because aluminum is the most common metal in the environment. When you look at soil, the most important constituent in most soil is aluminum. And when you breathe, you're breathing in you're breathing in dust that has aluminum. You're taking deodorants that have aluminum, etc. But there's no indication that any of that aluminum increases your risk of having the disease.
But when you have aluminum in the soil, isn't it like bauxite? It is already kind of locked up with oxygen. But what we have now, which is, I guess you could say, new in our world, is that we have so much pure aluminum available to us.
Pure aluminum or the aluminum that comes from acid rain. If you have acid water, it will dissolve the aluminum that's in the soil and put it into your body in a form that will cause toxicity.
So this is an environmental factor that we're talking about right now. And so some people are really searching for the environmental, touchstone that's going to be, this is what's causing Alzheimer's. How realistic is that?
Well, we've completed studies looking at other metals, and particularly copper. And copper in the water, if you look at different water sources, they'll have different amounts of copper in them. And there is a correlation of the disease. First indicated in animal studies with rabbits, that develop some pathology from copper in their water. And then humans also, epidemiological studies. In other words, studying people at different sources. There are studies ongoing in Texas right now from the Texas Research Consortium indicating there may be relationships of arsenic. So the idea of an environmental component to the disease is still there, but it hasn't been nailed down.
Copper, and we have a lot of water running through copper pipes.
Correct. And that copper may cause problems, but I can't tell people that they should change the copper pipes. I wouldn't.
No,
I would
no,
not suggest
saying.
That.
But it shows you how complex it is, and everyone is looking at everything. It's kind of like no stone is being left unturned because this is a disease. It's taking so many lives. It is so costly to us. How significant is President Obama's new brain mapping initiative? And President Obama, even I think didn't he call out Alzheimer's research in his last State of the Union?
Yes. Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, which is a less frequent condition but equally devastating to patients, are a major part of the brain imaging and brain connectome initiative, or whatever it is called, mapping. This whole initiative is incredibly complex. The brain is made of over 60 billion neurons, all of which connect, have thousands of connections to each other. So you're understanding how that works and how it works in a static situation. But it's important to remember that these connections change. As you learn new information in your brain reconnects itself.
The plasticity of the brain.
The plasticity of the brain is a major part of learning and memory. It's what is altered during Alzheimer's disease. But understanding how you even do the computer programming, how do you image that? How do you image 80 billion neurons and their thousands of connections for each one of those neurons that are changing every minute?
So compared to the Genome Project, how difficult is the brain mapping project?
I think it's far more difficult, not just in the sense of understanding the 80 billion neurons. I think it's far more difficult because we don't have a clear endpoint. With the Human Genome Project, you had a very defined endpoint, getting the sequence of the genome. That's a pretty obvious thing. You have all these bases, and you put them in sequence, and you're done. When you have the connections of the brain, when you have it defined, every person is different. And when do you look at it? When they're adolescents?
Yeah, you can just talk to people, and you can just see that people are wired differently.
Yes.
So you do a brain mapping for one person, you may not get the same results if you do it for somebody else.
I think it's highly likely, based on hearing what the director of the NIH has presented of it, Francis Collins, that the initial phases of this will focus on developing techniques to understand the human brain through imaging techniques such as positron emission tomography, et cetera, to be able to get global pictures at higher resolution, which will come close to seeing a single neuron, and further understanding simpler organisms like fruit flies or nematodes, which are small worms that have only 300 neurons in their brain.
Wow, and we've seen through the Genome Project that the solution, the end project, was only actually the starting line, because we now have the genome, but we don't know what it does and how to make it do what we want it to do. But we're going to get more on the latest on Alzheimer's research in a minute, but here's our number to call, 614-8980. We're talking with Dr. George Perry, one of the world's experts on Alzheimer's disease. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. We're speaking with Dr. George Perry. He's one of the world's leading researchers working on a way to beat Alzheimer's. Our phone lines are open. You can give us a call at 614-8980 if you've got a question about Alzheimer's. We'll try to answer it because there's so many unknowns. And Dr. Perry, Alzheimer's if you're Hispanic, it increases your likelihood of having Alzheimer's. Is that right?
Yeah, several recent studies have shown that people of Hispanic origin have a higher risk of having the disease, as well as African Americans.
And we don't know why that is, right?
Right now, we don't know why it is, although I would suspect it's related to lifestyle effects. But we don't know that. It could be also genetic effects, but there isn't enough known yet.
A lot of people have questions about the genetics of Alzheimer's. Let's go to the phones. Karen has a question about that. Karen, you're on the air.
Okay. Hi.
Hello, Karen.
Okay. My mom died of Alzheimer's 3 years ago, and now I'm 44 and wondering about whether I'm going to get it or not. And I've done some research online and I'm a member of the Alzheimer's Association and wondering about the gene and if I should get tested for that or not.
All right, Karen, I'm sorry to hear about your mom. I know what that's like. And is there a gene to be tested for?
There are a few genes that have an effect on Alzheimer's disease that are well established. Three of them are what's called autosomal dominant genes, and if you have mutations in them, you will develop the disease for sure. Usually the people that suffer from those genes, which is the amyloid precursor protein, presenilin-1 and presenilin-2, people usually have a very early onset of the disease, usually in the 40s to 60-year range. And most families that would have those genes would know that they would have it because they would have many members that would be affected early.
But isn't it, if you had a parent who died of Alzheimer's who were younger than 50, then you have a 50-50 chance of also having it?
If you inherit that gene. If you have a parent that died of the disease, you're at higher risk, particularly if it's a female. Like if your mother had it, you are at higher risk because there is a bit of mitochondrial inheritance, which is inherited only from the mother. There's another gene which is probably more important for the U.S. population. It's called an apolipoprotein E, and depending on which form you inherit of this gene, you have a different risk of developing the disease. If you inherit the E4 form, you have a threefold higher risk of developing the disease during your life.
But then Karen has a very tough decision to make of being tested for it, and then what do you do with that information? Is getting a gene like that, is that necessarily a sentence that you're going to have chronic Alzheimer's?
If you find the E4 allele, or just knowing your ApoE genotype, it's not determinate. In other words, just knowing what your genotype is doesn't mean you know whether you're going to develop the disease during your lifetime. The other genes I mentioned, APP and presenilin-1 and presenilin-2, it's highly likely you will develop the disease. 99% of the people that have mutations in those proteins develop the disease, but they're exceedingly rare.
A lot of people wonder if diet and exercise has anything to do with whether you can get Alzheimer's. Mike, we're going to go to the phones. Mike's on the line, and he has a question along those lines. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, my question is, if a good diet would contribute towards avoiding getting the disease, and if a good diet would contribute towards reducing the effects of the disease if you did have it.
Thank you for that call, Mike.
Yeah. A good diet after you have the disease, I really don't know if there being any study that indicates that people after they have the disease, lifestyle intervention makes a huge difference. Prior to developing the disease, exercise, eating a well-balanced diet, being socially involved, all of those make a difference in reducing the disease. And that reduction is that you'll have more years of healthy life.
So brain exercising, doing crossword puzzles, what does that do?
All of those seem to reduce the disease. But it's hard to detach one from the other because most people that have these, like have a good diet or are mentally and physically engaged, usually are also in higher socioeconomic placement, et cetera.
If you got a question about Alzheimer's, now's the time to call. 614-8980. Phone lines are open. So earlier when we were talking off mic that Alzheimer's, it's around the world. It doesn't matter if you're in the first world, third world, it's there.
Yes, it's throughout the world. There were some indications early on that people in Africa might have a lower incidence. And right now, the most recent studies suggest that there's a pretty similar incidence throughout the world. And why I say that similar, it's hard to diagnose Alzheimer's disease. Well, there are new methods showing you can measure the amount of plaques people have. Alzheimer's disease is not just the pathology of the disease, it's cognitive loss. And that puts it in a social context. In different cultures, people have different expectations for people to mentally perform.
Dementia used to be the word that we would hear, or senility would be the words, but now it's more diagnostic in description.
Well, dementia is the whole category of cognitive loss. You can be a young individual and have head trauma and be demented, or have other debilitating conditions early in life. But late onset dementia, cognitive loss, about 60 to 70% of that's related to Alzheimer's disease. Now, back to the third world issue. This actually has much bigger implications than one would project, because early on, and until recently, most of the emphasis has been in the developed world where most of the older people are living. Well, what's happening is in the developing world, the young people that are abundant through people having more children, they're living on to old age, and their population is aging just like the first world did in the past. And it's going to have a tremendous effect on them in terms of their healthcare system, because their Alzheimer's disease is going to be growing much faster than you find in the United States.
And back to the phones, and Denise is on the line and has a question about alcoholism and Alzheimer's. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was just wondering if alcoholism contributed to Alzheimer's.
Well, and there's like different levels of alcoholism. There's social drinking, and there's acute alcoholism, which is, you know, lays waste to people. So what level are you thinking, Denise?
Well, I used to help take care of a gentleman whose family had pretty much discarded him because he had severe alcoholism, and then he ended up with a diagnosis of
so that's chronic alcoholism.
Yes.
All right. Well, Dr. Perry, thank you for that call, Denise.
Moderate drinking actually has a protective effect from Alzheimer's disease. A couple drinks a day, a couple ounces. It isn't known completely why, but it doesn't have to be wine. Chronic alcoholism, I don't think it's been correlated with a tremendous increase in risk from Alzheimer's disease. It does increase the risk, but the issue is chronic alcoholism causes a tremendous amount of brain damage. And that brain damage causes dementia independent of Alzheimer's disease. So you can have young individuals in their 30s and 40s, they're chronic alcoholics, especially when they have nutritional problems. If they drink straight alcohol, they have B vitamin deficiencies, and that leads to a tremendous amount of brain death.
Okay. Now, there are scans that are being developed now for living people. You don't have to do a biopsy. You don't have to do an autopsy to take a look at how much plaque has developed inside the brain, which is associated with Alzheimer's. What's happening on that front?
What's one of the major breakthroughs in the last few years? We can now know when people are 50 or 60 years old how much plaque or neurofibrillary tangles, which is even a newer advent in imaging techniques. You can know the pathology while the people are still living. What's come from that is what was already known by neuropathologists, which is what I am in terms of my research area, is that many people that are normal in their 50s or 60s already have aspects of pathology of the disease. Those people that have the changes are more likely to develop the disease in the coming years. Is that useful for patients to know?
And how protected is that information?
I don't know how it's protected in terms of insurance agencies or any of those type of issues.
Because there are laws to protect genetic information, but not so much this.
Well, even the genetic information, it protects you from health insurance. I don't know if it protects you from life insurance.
Right. A lot of questions to be answered about, because the cost associated with Alzheimer's care is phenomenal. It's
$200 billion a year is spent in the United States in direct care.
But in treatment, where are we in providing treatment?
There are a tremendous number of clinical trials to develop ways to remove the amyloid, which has not been terribly effective in treating patients. The current drugs that are approved provide symptomatic relief, which does have a positive benefit for patients, but generally for a fleeting time, maybe a year, the patients will have some benefit.
So over at the bar shop, they're doing some work on the rapamycin. So what is your take on that?
Rapamycin offers promise to look at the aging process, and the work from the bar shop suggests that rapamycin might have benefit based on animal studies.
But they're saying that it does have some benefit. It may slow or even reverse some of the symptoms of Alzheimer's. They're very up on it.
Yes, I know they're very up on it.
So I'm interested in hearing what you have to say on it.
Well, there have been probably over 100 drugs that have had benefit in mice that have been applied to humans in a few cases and had no benefit.
So we're still holding out hope, but we're not sure what to say yet.
That's what all of us do that study
Alzheimer's
disease.
There's so many different things happening right now in this area. It reminds me of, like, to think about where we are in Alzheimer's, we don't know. We're looking for a solution. And then look backward like, oh, yeah, well, of course the plague was caused by fleas on rats. They had no idea, or polio or whatever. This area of unknown and searching and looking for solutions, you just have to just fun science. That's all you can say, right?
Of course.
All right, Dr. Perry, Dr. George Perry, thank you so much. One of the world's top Alzheimer's disease researchers, Dean of the UTSA College of Science, Professor of Biology. Thanks for coming up here to the studios and being on the air today. Thanks to our callers and online participants. You've been listening to The Source on KSTX. The conversation continues on our website at tpr.org. You can still comment there and exchange ideas with other listeners about the program. Paul Flav is the producer of The Source. Wayne Coble is the TPR program director. Chris Udaly is our web producer. We get production help from Catherine Dixon. I'm David Martin Davies. You can check us out online at tpr.org. The Source is a production of KSTX, Texas Public Radio, and support from The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.